Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Two-Headed Game Master. I'm Cosmo, the first head.
I'm Dane, the horror head.
Two-Headed Game Master! Yeah! Oh, you grew a new head.
We're getting less enthusiastic about that.
I think the bit might suck to listen to.
Yeah.
Like, what we're doing is, like, a two-headed monster mutates a third head, and one that's kind of gross, and we're trying to, like, evoke the thing through audio.
Yeah, I think it's still an okay bit, but, like, you know, we don't go as hard as we used to, but it's also, yeah, less jarring. It doesn't max out the voice levels. Anyways.
Third head.
Hello, I'm the third head that just grew out. Here, I'm the third head. I didn't prepare.
Who actually are you?
I am Nico. Thank you for having me again.
Yes.
This is my third podcast? This is my third time guessing, or maybe third.
Recording or hearing. He's never heard of one before.
Well, that's true.
Two-Headed Game Master is a podcast about writing, designing, running, and playing role-playing games where we discuss our favorite hobby, share our thoughts with you, and play some games sometimes. Third Head, what are we discussing this time?
Well, to all three of our listeners who actually watched the whole thing, and by three I mean us in this room here, because I'm pretty sure we're the only people who've watched through the whole thing. We're here to talk about and debrief.
I'm pretty sure Brian did.
We're here to talk about and debrief our time with Supermassive's The Quarry.
The Quarry.
Yes, yes.
So, I should have been the Supermassive head.
I mean, that's good. Because, like, a big head is a funny joke. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Ties so, in nicely. Big Mo just released their first game. Yeah, no, it's just.
I mean, that's a cool. Good, that's another cool name.
Anyways, we did a quarry playthrough of on Twitch, and if you missed it, that's bummer. If you're one of our patrons, you can go back and watch the whole thing. Mm-hmm. But actually, you could probably just go to Twitch.
You can go to twitch.tv/. Usurp Spaceman and check the videos and watch all 8 hours.
Yeah.
Yeah. Took 8 hours to play through the whole game. We did it in one night because we're champions of marathoning. So, yeah, it was an experience for sure.
So, we're going to be talking about that. And I would say, I mean, I guess it's not necessary to have consumed that to enjoy this show, because we're going to be talking about just like game design and the story and the experience of playing it. But I would say maybe if you don't feel like watching us do it for 8 hours, maybe play The Quarry yourself.
Sure.
Or there's maybe a shorter playthrough that someone else has put together on the internet. And that's kind of one of the cool things about it that we're going to discuss. There's a lot of different versions of it, and it is, you know, watchable as well as playable.
Some, probably not all, of our listeners might ask you, what is The Quarry?
What is The Quarry? Well, that's kind of what I was getting at when I said, like, go check out The Quarry.
Right.
Not necessarily
a brief intro of The Quarry. So, one, mentioned Supermassive Games. Mm-hmm. It's British? Question mark?
It might be. Here, I'll look it up real quick. We might as well not be wrong. We have the answers in our pockets.
It's a publishing or a studio that makes these horror games. Their big hit was Until Dawn.
Until Dawn.
And they did grip the gaming community as very interesting, very story-driven games, and like there's a bunch of different paths, and your choices can kill off a character or save a character, or, you know, have no effect at all, or, you know.
It's like a continuation of like the Telltale games.
Yeah, it's like a step up from the
Telltales. It had Telltale DNA, I felt like. I would say in terms of the way the games are designed and like how you interact with them, it's not that different from a Telltale game. It's like you watch a scene and then you make a choice and with some like light interactivity. Mm-hmm. But the presentation of The Quarry was like almost movie quality with the, you know, like motion capture and facial animation capture stuff. Like it's a really, really striking high quality video game that, you know, because it doesn't have a ton of gameplay, they put their, it seems like they put their resource in looking good and, like, capturing the characters really well. But yeah, in other respects, a lot like a Telltale game. Almost an interactive, like, you know, visual novel or film.
Less reading. Less mandatory reading.
Yeah, certainly less reading than a Telltale game.
Yeah, it is very reactive. The kind of the thing with these supermassive games is like the quick time event, to where it's like you're kind of watching the scene play out.
Yeah.
And then something will happen. One of the early QTEs in this is, oh, somebody throws you the keys.
Yeah.
Catch the keys. And then slow motion, hit the right buttons on the controller or keyboard to catch the keys or not.
Which, hey, game design, that's a nice little, like, low stakes way to teach you, because you flub that one, right? You flub that one immediately because you don't expect a gameplay mechanic to suddenly come flying at you. But then you've been taught.
Yeah, like, you've been taught.
That's what to look for. Look for these, you know, look for these quick reaction moments, and that's where you actually, like, play a video game. Before we get too in the weeds on that, though, so the story, the quarry is a pretty classic, I would say, horror setting, right?
Yeah, it's a summer camp,
which is awesome.
And, you know, bad stuff happens. Yeah. There's monsters. They're werewolves, I think, we're past, you know, spoilers.
Yeah, I think we're past spoiling stuff. I think this is going to be spoiler-heavy, because we're going to be discussing different...
Well, the game's been out for 2 years, and we also did play through it, yeah.
So the premise, a group of young adults at the summer camp, they were counselors, camp is over, they've had a little time to, like, hang out by themselves, relationships and drama has happened, and it's ending, but there's one more night at the camp, and that's when the bad stuff happens. It's pretty cool. Juicy premise for horror.
Yeah.
So, like, this was my, well, I guess I've played other Telltale games, but definitely this is my first supermassive game. And actually I haven't really played that much horror. Like Amnesia back in the day.
Amnesia was great.
I tried to get into Evil Within, but it never stuck.
Well, you've played all the Resident Evil games, though. Or most of them.
No, not. I've only really fucked with 4 and...
Okay.
4 and 5.
4, they say, is the best.
Yeah. Gotta save the president's daughter. It's up to us.
But... And so, not having played 4 myself, but having watched you play when we were younger...
Oh, and 7. We did 7.
Yeah, 7. 4 is... Like, 4 is very much an action game.
So is 5.
In like a horror setting.
Right. No, yeah.
You know, like, there's survival elements which make it scarier, and there's the just set dressing of horror. There's monsters and scary stuff going on. But, like, you get guns, you kick people's asses, and you're an action
boss fights
hero.
And, like, you know, you can have your preferred weapons and, you know, etc.
Yeah. 7, Resident Evil 7, is the most recent, like, horror game that I engaged with. And you were not much of an action hero in that. But it also, I don't know.
That one was more runaway.
Yeah, that was, like, runaway from everything all the time.
There's definitely different, like, genres of, like, gameplay that fall under the umbrella of Resident Evil.
He said the name
umbrella
of the thing.
Of, like, horror, for sure. Because another great horror game that I never miss a chance to shout out is Year Walk, which...
I do remember
Year Walk. We all played together, okay. Actually. All that's right.
That's
way
back. That's a strange one.
But that one's more... I mean, you know, we don't have to get into that one specifically, but that one's a puzzle game.
Yeah.
It's a horror setting in which...
And there are unnerving things that happen.
There's unnerving visuals and stuff, but what you are doing is solving puzzles.
To move forward
the story.
Yeah, just a point-and-click adventure game, basically.
But yeah, as far as QTE goes, or, like, quick time events, like, I thought... Well, I guess what I want to say is just like, I was a little bit frustrated with how many tutorials there were, or like how long the tutorials were. If you watch it, our gameplay of it is like, the tutorial sections are cool. They're kind of like Fallout meets, what did we say? What is it?
You said something about it.
Yeah, anyway.
They're little animations
that kind of teach you, oh, like...
Those ones, sorry.
The forest is a dangerous place.
Yeah.
Those in particular, I think you can... If you've played through a Supermassive game before, you don't have to engage with that at all.
Right.
But it was helpful for us. Of like, these are the kind of things that we're going to ask you to do throughout this game.
I thought when you said tutorial, I thought you were talking about, like, the gameplay sequence where, like, you go to shoot bottles, and that's where the game teaches you how to use the gun. You're talking about the funny little videos.
There's the funny little video even before that. It's a pre-tutorial the in-game tutorial of, like, this is how you use the shotgun.
Those are, like, the Fallout 4 videos that explain, like, your special stats. And
right.
How they can save you, but also how they'll kill you if you do it bad.
No, yeah, but I like the QTEs in general. I was going to say the only other bad video game... Not bad video game. Bad QTE... section of a video game was in Shadows of the Damned. Which, do you remember that one?
I remember Shadows of the Damned.
Oh, yeah. Well, I don't have anything particular to say except for I never actually finished Shadows of the Damned because I got to, like, there was one enemy where it had a QTE event that was too fucking fast. And maybe it was because I was a little kid playing it, but I could not hack it. And I, like, did it, like, 4 times. More than that, probably. But then I was just like, you know what?
I don't want to anymore.
I'm just going to not play this game anymore.
That can be a liberating moment when you choose to no longer engage with something like that and not force yourself to overcome it.
Right. But in context of the quarry, I think it's great. You can fail every single QTE event and the game and the experience moves forward.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's not great if... Well, and you probably won't unless you're trying to.
It's not great necessarily if you want everyone to live, but, like, that's a good version of the story where everything does go wrong. Everything that can does.
Mm-hmm.
That's a possibility. And then there's, like, you know, perfect ending. Everyone lives and you make the best choices. I don't know if...
So, like, unlike some video games, like... I don't know, Cyberpunk or Mass Effect, there is no good ending.
Okay.
Right? Like, The Quarry, it's a horror game, so bad shit happens, and, like, you know, the best ending is probably everyone survives, and, like, there's enough evidence, and I don't get that mechanic, and we can get into the evidence mechanic later.
I remember thinking that was really cool when they explained that in one of those little video cartoon tutorial things, where they set up in the very beginning that, like, you know, are there witnesses? Do you have evidence? Like, you know, collect the recordings, collect the photos. That was a great way to set up the fact that, like, yeah, you might survive, but then you might go to jail for everything that happens here. Because, like, the cops aren't going to believe that there's a werewolf unless you prove somehow that, like, a monster killed these people. They're going to be thinking, like, who killed these people?
Yeah.
One of you people who is still alive.
One survivor counselor comes away from 8 other dead bodies and is just like, a monster did it.
Right. That kid's going to jail.
Well, the ending we got was like weird bear massacre, right?
Right.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. We got,
that's
we
what
got,
the cops,
like, the news story,
ended up, or like, yeah, not the cops, the
but
news.
The story was became. Bears.
Cause with us in our playthrough, I think only 2 or 3 people died. No, more than that. Like, half the party died.
We could litigate. I mean, Jacob definitely died. Shot him.
Yeah,
Rip Bozo.
Rip Meatball.
No, not Rip Bozo. Rip Meatball.
Rip Meatball.
That was so disappointing. I stand by your decision to...
to shoot
to
into
blast
the
bush. That bush.
To blast blindly into a bush. But,
Let's see, then who was next? I think we did pretty good up until kind of the end. Ryan died.
Ryan died?
Yeah. You didn't blast Chris,
and then
the werewolf Chris killed you.
Yeah.
And then that ended up killing what was her name? Laura?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Laura and they the both, other, the cop killed each other.
Yeah. And then also at the very end.
And then Caitlin got smashed.
Because I whiffed the, because that was the, I hadn't used the gun mechanic before, and I thought I was really doing wiggly. It right.
Yeah.
I thought I was doing it right, and I whiffed my shot, and so they died.
And then, well, I think, did we kill Nick, the werewolf Nick?
No, I don't think we ever killed him. He exploded out of his skin, got shot, and then ran away.
Well, then he got captured by the family.
Mm. Yeah, I don't think we killed him.
And then, because we stopped Laura from shooting the werewolf in the cage.
Yeah.
Right.
That was Nick.
Yeah. I don't think that was Nick. I think that
it was Nick.
The boy.
Nope. Caleb is the werewolf. Our ending was Caleb, who was one of the original werewolves, as we're, you know, explaining this, that maybe our listeners hadn't watched us play it. He was the one in the fireplace. Like, he ended the game in the fireplace. He killed Caitlin.
Ended
in the lodge.
So, yeah. Man, I thought that was the one who came out of the cage, though, because we turned off the power.
We had like four or five.
Okay.
Yeah.
But
it was about half, yeah.
That was the ending we got. We had enough evidence to kind of like exonerate us of any wrongdoing, the survivors, but not enough evidence to like get anyone in trouble. But also, a lot of the people responsible for what was going on were also dead.
Yeah, well, I guess it could have been easier to go back and just say who survived, because Emma and Abigail survived.
Yep.
Dylan survived by hiding in the kitchen.
Yep.
Werewolf Caleb survived but was still a werewolf. Max survived but was still a werewolf. And Nick survived, but no, Nick. I forgot who ate Nick. I think it was Silas, the wolf that we didn't find.
Yeah, he got dead.
So anyways, what I was getting at is I had the availability to do another playthrough just by my onesie. And I tried really hard to keep everybody alive, which I succeeded in. I kept all the counselors alive.
Mm.
I ended up killing Silas, which was like the...
Oh, did you murder the wolf? Did you murder the grandma?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, come on.
I think she's dead.
Yeah, that was unclear for me.
I think she's a ghost, because her ghost is floating around in the woods at the very beginning, in a way where, like, I don't think she's alive. Also, she talks to you, the player.
Oh, no, not her. The, the cop's dad. Mom. Yeah.
What? Yeah, we blasted her.
Her. Yeah, did you also? Blasted her. Okay, good. Making sure.
But the gypsy, mom.
True, that lady.
She's somebody else.
Right.
And I don't think she's alive in the story.
She's part of the harem scarum.
Yeah.
No. Yeah. She's. Yeah.
Anyway, so the thing I was getting at is my playthrough. I didn't like get all like 100% completionist and like. Didn't collect all the evidence. That's what started this thing, was the evidence collection.
Mm-hmm.
So my ending, all the counselors survived, they got blamed for it. It was counselors massacre family.
Ah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So not enough evidence, maybe.
Right.
I mean, maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe there's...
And
maybe
I didn't,
there isn't enough evidence.
I did not listen to the fucking 45-minute podcast at the end.
Well, so that's a thing that I was almost going to touch on, is I still don't know, because I haven't, like, gone in-depth and researched, like, every possible ending, every possible thing. But it seems like that's what it kind of seemed like to me, at least listening to the end credits, is maybe that podcast just goes on longer and longer the more evidence that you get. There might not be a good ending where they prove that werewolves are real.
Yeah.
Maybe evidence doesn't affect outcome. Maybe
it might it just be like, that here's a bonus more. What are you saying about long podcasts?
We hate them.
Well, folks in glass houses shouldn't throw glass stones or whatever. but I didn't like listening to that. It wasn't good.
Yeah. Well, let's get back to something that
procedurally write
will be
a
enjoyable for our listeners and not make a you know, a bad podcast now
okay,
that we know
yes.
what one looks like. So gameplay.
Yeah.
Right? We talked about a couple mechanics, and like let's just go through them again and just talk about mechanics, right? So we talked about quick time events.
There's the most basic where, like, in third-person camera, you can walk a character around an area. And you can click to interact with objects.
So I found that
really boring and unnecessary, yeah. especially on my second playthrough, kind of when I like kind of knew just like what was gonna happen, and like, you know, because all the mystery and like possible jump scares and all that had been like, you know, fleshed out. So I thought our first playthrough, when we were doing it on Twitch, I did get into the horror, even though we were all together and like making jokes and, you know, having a good time. I was like, yeah, this is decently, you know, it got my heart rate up, is mm-hmm. what I'm saying.
No, it totally did.
Yeah.
I was
buying it, yeah, pretty much the whole time.
But like for replayability, walking around just annoyed me. It's like, oh fuck, I gotta like walk yeah. around, and you go slowly. There's no sprint button. And like,
it's also like the areas are very constrained. Mm-hmm. They're fixed camera angles. It's like third person, but you yeah. don't get to control the camera like a, you know, a Gears of War action game type thing. Mm-hmm. It's fixed cameras like an old Resident Evil, which means that like the important stuff that's kind of out in the open, you know where that is, and you just have to slowly walk to it, click mm-hmm. on it. And then you have to like make sure that you walk into every place and trigger every camera right. angle to try and unlock the cards.
And I believe this is a thing throughout all Supermassive games. There's like three like collectible or interactable, or there's three things you're looking for when you're walking around. There's some sort of like evidence or clues, which in the quarry they were both of those things. There were clues and then a separate evidence category.
Yeah.
Right. And I have no idea what the difference is. And like,
I mean, you might be right, Nico. It might have just been like sound bites for the podcast that then like get procedurally cut into a.
It's kind of what it felt like credits. When we were at that point in the credits, because they were talking. Well, what about the blank? Like the
right.
what about the vial of mysterious yeah. liquid or yeah. whatever.
And they're like, oh yeah, I remember there was a vial of mysterious liquid in the tree.
And then they kind of
didn't really amount to
and
anything.
And then yeah, on
the
podcast
story.
They kind of quip about it, but I think as far as, because you were just saying about like replayability, I think it's pretty well. It's really steep downfall of like diminishing returns
mm-hmm.
on this. Definitely the meat of any Supermassive game that I've like either played or like watched somebody else play is like. You just, you buy into it and you're like, this is like the canon playthrough. My first time seeing this is the way that it goes.
Yeah.
yeah.
Which is interesting because that is, I agree 100% because the act of actually playing the playable parts of the game, not that fun. Mm-hmm. And take a long time. Like, oh yeah, I'm going to walk over here. I got to make sure I pick up the teddy bear or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I got to make sure I, you know, see the thing behind the cabin and press the button so that I watch the little scene. So that event is canonized for this playthrough, so that later on we can use it, whatever. That's not very fun. But that's incongruous with how many characters there are, how many different directions they can go at different points, and like how many of them can die or not die in different situations. But to get that, you have to play it again, when the playing it is actually not that fun.
Yeah.
Is one of the movie modes... Because, like, for this, for replayability and accessibility, is one of the movie modes, like, a you just make the choices?
I believe that is the director's cut.
Director's mode. Cut.
So,
because as far as replayability goes, they have a ton of options.
Yeah.
For, like, they have, like, death rewinds. Mm, you yeah. can try it again. They have, like, well, what we're talking about, like, movie mode, everyone dies. Movie mode, everyone lives.
Mm.
And
then director's cut.
Director's cut to where it's like movie mode, but you get to do the decisions.
Yeah.
So as far as that goes, like, they've got a lot of built-in stuff to, like, which makes sense. Like, they don't want somebody to just spend, like, $60 or $80 on a brand new game and play it for 8 hours and then just be done with it.
Considering the talent that was brought into it, the amount of voice lines that were, like, written and recorded and animation, like... In our playthrough, we probably saw, I don't know, 50% of everything that can possibly happen.
Like, yeah,
you know?
Maybe.
I think it was a little bit higher than that.
Okay, 60
because
maybe.
Because most of our people survived until, like, the end.
Until the very end.
Right? So I feel like it was probably, like, yeah, 60, maybe 70%.
But even still.
Some of, like, the options of, like, oh, you say this line or, you know, you say this line. like they get a similar response or the same response, mm-hmm. but then like, you know, oh, the relationship changed.
Right.
Right. So yeah. they did, I think, and that's probably just a producer, like cost effective way to like make it. So what I will say in terms of, you know, relating this to what we usually talk about, I think The Quarry did a great job of keeping it simple enough and like, you know, their cost down because, you know, they were paying actors and shit. Yeah. And
they had to write everything. And
they did. There were some railroads in there, but they did a good job of making it feel like it wasn't a railroad.
Mm. Yeah. Branching right, like, paths that go left, right, and mm-hmm. center, but end up coming back to the center path. Yeah, right.
Like kind of a low stakes early one is when Ryan and is it Dylan? When they're in the counselor's office.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When Ryan and Dylan are looking around in the counselor's office trying to charge the cell phones,
mm-hmm.
there's a lot of stuff in there that can be like pretty inconsequential. Like, you know, does he bother to look at the family portrait on the desk?
Does he flirt with Ryan?
Yeah. Do you flirt? Well, you know, spoiler alert, you're not getting married at the end of this.
Yeah.
Even if you both survive and everything works out, like that's not a victory condition of this game, getting like taking your relationship to the next level. It's the monster shit.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, you get to make a lot of choices there. And maybe you come away with some extra information. Maybe you don't. Maybe your relationship is, you know, friendly, flirty. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's awkward. But then you guys still go to the bonfire. Like, that. Yeah. That is how that mm-hmm. ends, regardless of anything else that happens in that office.
All the characters end up at the bonfire.
Which is a great lesson. And if you are avid listeners of us and, like, I won't say true fans because that's a little mean to the people who actually listen because they don't listen to every episode. But we did an episode a couple times ago about video games and tabletop role-playing games and, like, learning lessons from each other.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think a great thing to take away from this game is how to, like, make your player character or your player's character choice that is like totally inconsequential to the story, but make it feel like it matters, right? Because like there's a little triangle going on in this game between Ryan, Caitlin, and Dylan.
Mm-hmm.
Like Ryan can start crushing on Caitlin or Dylan, right? And it just depends on how you choose to interact mm-hmm. in that triangle, right? Like,
yeah.
Did we get to do when they're playing Truth or Dare, after Nick and Emma French after they French before they French, you can make Ryan kiss Dylan or Caitlin.
Mm.
I think we chose Dylan, right?
You know, I can't remember very much.
Yeah, I don't remember either.
I mean, because those choices ended up being fairly inconsequential.
Yeah, but and there's also, through the playthrough that we did, I played through it solo. I experimented with movie mode, and then I watched one of our favorite streamers, their playthrough back from when the game was released. That Truth or Dare sequence can go very differently.
Hmm.
Because, like, there's a couple of... It always ends with the Frenching incident.
Yeah.
And, like, that's what moves on the story.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Because then the party kind of separates.
Right. Making it seem like these choices matter and, like, getting the immediate feedback of, like, you just made a choice.
Yeah. And this person went over here, did this.
And then it always ends in the same way of eventually Truth or Dare gets kicked to... somebody, and they're like, Emma, kiss Jacob or Nick.
Yeah, pick one.
But, like, you can, like, if you choose, you know, Jacob, like, gets a dare to jump over a fire pit, and then Caitlin's like, that's dangerous, don't do it, and becomes kind of like a downer.
Yeah, that was in Northern Lions.
Yeah, that was eggs.
I remember
that now. Mm-hmm. Which we didn't do.
No, yeah, we didn't get that.
We chose...
I'll say, our Truth or Dare is kind of a bummer. We could have jumped over some more fires.
I mean, they didn't end up jumping over a fire, but whatever. Mm. So yeah, so like that's a perfect and like that's a great campfire moment, like in a tabletop role playing game.
Yeah.
You know, have a camp where like it doesn't really matter. Like, it's not going to ruin the party. Nobody's going to be in danger for the choices they make.
You're going to continue your journey in the morning.
But it might just be fun to mm-hmm. riff on that for a little bit. And, like, maybe Jacob tries to jump over the fire
right.
and falls in it and gets, like, a minor burn. And it's like, you idiot.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think it's really interesting to dissect and debrief, especially this game and other games like it. But I'll say, like, the duality of that is, like, it becomes the game itself and the experience, like, can feel less and less fun the more that I, like, dissect it.
Yeah.
Because I was just thinking, it's like, oh, shit, you know, like, the only reason we had, like, guns, shotguns, multiple, is because we, like, explored around and clicked on them.
Uh-huh.
It's like, I wonder what a shotgunless playthrough of the quarry is like. And then I'm like, huh, I wonder if that just means, like, people die a lot more often, or maybe not. Like,
yeah,
it's interesting to think about, but then if you like try to do that, there can be a lot of player expectation to be like, oh, what if I could I can I make everyone survive if I shotgun never grab a shotgun?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and then the answer might just be no,
right?
And then you're just like, oh, well, I'm disappointed because I hit every single QTE,
yeah,
and like, yeah, so. It is, like, really interesting to, like, dive in and, like, get into the gears, but then you can see some of those, like, choices that, like, are, like, you know what? You either play or watch the game all the way through, like, four or five times, you'll find out, like, which ones are, like, okay, this always happens.
Yeah, where's the, you're find those railroads. But that's, it's a very interesting thing to discuss, and, like, we've mentioned several times while we were playing through it. Like, I'd love to see just, like, the whole map of,
yeah,
like, you know.
To see a big, like,
decision.
A, like, giant flowchart, yeah.
Giant whiteboard of, like, every point, like, color-coded. Every point of path can diverge and where it intersects with another one. And, like, a little bubble that explains what happens in this scene if you come to it from this angle. So I wondered aloud a couple times what the, like, value of it being a game versus something else was. When you played movie mode, did you get to skip the parts that kind of sucked where you get to, like, walk around the like,
or yeah, know, like, what did a scene where they were just walking around,
if you're playing in director's cut, do you still have to, like, walk the POV character around with the stick?
I don't know. I didn't play director's cut. But in the movie mode, I chose everybody dies.
Okay.
So it took away the walking around. Okay. They didn't really walk around. I can't remember. I don't think they, like, you know, found any evidence or clues that wasn't pointed out. The only thing was the, like, the items, right? So I never really finished my thought from a while ago of, like, you walk around for a couple reasons. Like, one of them is, like, you know, this fourth wall kind of, you know, clues and evidence stuff. Right. But then also you get to walk around and, you know, pick up, find the shotgun, open the safe, choose
find
to
the key,
take the fireworks, yeah. You know, etc. So those were auto, you know, chosen, at least in the non-director's cut. Maybe in the director's cut you can choose. Mm-hmm. But, like, for example, the when Abigail and Emma were trying to get their bags and, like, breaking open that door,
yeah,
just automatically chose not to break open that door. Mm-hmm. Which they didn't, then that doesn't, you know, have their, like, the teddy bear in there that, you know, the teddy Ruxpin or whatever. And then, so, like, Emma did find the shotgun and, you know, opened the safe, but chose not to take the fireworks, right? So, like, it skipped the actual walking
take
around.
Take the gun, but not the fireworks?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know.
Hey, man.
I'm just thinking about, you know, it's like, it's just, a gun or four fireworks. Like, you know, if you have one, a gun, who needs fireworks?
In the decision-making brain of this young girl, where she's like, oh, this dangerous thing, yes. The other dangerous thing, eh.
You have to remember she's a TikToker. Guns are way more postable than
gun.
Gun is a prop for her life, which is her
whole
personality.
Phone content. Yeah. Okay. So
So yes, it does skip the. The walking around.
The police are coming to get you for your bad takes. No.
Bad take jail.
Okay, so there with the other modes, it doesn't. It makes it more like watching something.
Well, the movie modes are literally a movie.
Okay.
And I fell asleep.
And you don't control it all. It's just based on
how long is the movie?
So you pre-select an outcome.
5 hours. Okay. All right.
You pre-select an outcome. Everyone lives. Yep. Mm-hmm. And then the only scenes that you see are the ones where they find or don't find something that's going to affect whether or not characters live.
Well, you see all the conversations.
Yeah, and all the conversations and discussions and stuff, as if it was a movie. So, okay, then that
What was really annoying on Xbox is you had to have the controller on.
Oh, I was just about to. I was just about to mention that because I'm like, oh, I wonder if you can like just turn the controller off.
So movie mode
is. Or if it
is,
pauses when
movie mode is kill your battery.
Yeah.
And like maybe there's a setting you can fuck with on the Xbox, and the computer version probably doesn't do that, et cetera. But no, that was something because like I fell asleep a couple times. Granted, it was like early. Like I came back from staying over at a friend's house. And so I was like, well, you know, I'm up.
Yeah.
I'm going to sit on the couch and, like, you know, kind of just do nothing. And then, you know, I fell asleep a couple times and I'd wake up and it would be, you know, the pause menu. I'm like,
you're like, damn it. Yeah.
So the branching paths, right, are interesting, but I also... Going back to, like, the, you know, maybe it should just be a movie because, like, a lot of, like, the quick time events really have no far-reaching effects. Like dodging all the sticks and stuff.
They just kind of increase like, the drama a
little bit. Yeah, and, like, while you're playing it for the first time, especially, you're like, oh, I better not because there are some that do matter, right? But, like, that's, like, the perfect way to hide those is because, like, some don't matter, and some do matter. So then, like, you want to hit everyone or, you know, we talked about, like, tactically failing them sometimes.
Yeah, to just...
But, like, that didn't... It might matter in some weird way, and you would have to map out the whole web. But the one I'm talking about is when Caitlin was alone upstairs and, like, Bobby was there.
Mm-hmm.
Cosmo, like, failed a couple ones because he's like, I think Bobby's on our side, you know.
Et cetera.
Caitlin does get blooded. She gets a blood vial thrown at her face.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, I don't think that one actually matters.
I still got killed by a werewolf as Caitlin at the end.
Right. Well, that's because you were out in the rain. Yeah, I get why that worked. But, see, that's what I mean. Is like, if you don't get blooded, Caitlin still makes it all the way to the end. And then you have the, you know.
Right. So is the blooding... Is that not actually a game mechanic? Is that just, like, a narrative beat where you learn that, like, oh, that's how they, like, protect themselves from the werewolf, but it doesn't actually determine...
I think that is all set up for the end when you're tracking down Silas.
Okay. Which we didn't get to in our playthrough.
Right. And I just blasted him right away because fuck that guy. And fuck that stupid witch in the woods.
Yeah.
And fuck that whole fucking Hackett family.
Yeah. They're all dicks.
But so apparently I was doing some research on the fandom wikis. Silas, when I found him on my playthrough of Everybody Lives, he was sleeping and then it's like raise the gun, shoot the gun. I'm like, yes, yes.
Yeah.
But I think from reading like the wikis of possible and I want to get more into the wikis because I think it's actually pretty cool and it goes into the branching paths. But reading the wikis of like some people's, you know, possible deaths is Ryan and Laura could die in that instance. Silas like wakes up and attacks them, I think. But like I had the blood I had this blood. Uh-huh. So, like, I think that's why Silas was asleep when I got there.
Mm. If you don't have the blood, he's already awake and ready to kill you.
I think. I don't know.
But is it, like, is it actually because you have the blood, or just, like, that's an alternate version of it?
Good question.
Yeah, I think a lot of the value of, going back to what you originally said, what is the value of this being an interactive piece of entertainment or just a movie? Mm-hmm. And I think that just, like, the interactive piece, it, like, goes into the gamification of everything. There's, like, the evidence, there's mm-hmm. the clues, and there's the tarot cards in the quarry, to where it's, like, all those are collectibles. Gamers mm-hmm. love collectibles. It's a known fact. But, like, that's part of it. Mm-hmm. It's just, like, that's what makes it a game, and that's, like, kind of fills it out.
Right.
And even talking about, like, the movie stuff, you think about it, like, our playthrough, 8 hours long, and then a movie mode playthrough where everyone lives, so there's more people, is only 5 hours. Mm.
Everyone.
You said everyone dies.
Everyone dies is 5 hours.
Mm. Everyone dies is 5 hours, so that's 3 hours. And really, 3 hours is not that much time of filler
mm-hmm.
when you lump that in to, like, the entire, like, experience, I mm-hmm. guess. So it's, like...
Especially since there's, you know, there's probably a handful of hours outside of, you know, our playthrough, that playthrough, and the Everyone Lives playthrough that we still haven't experienced.
Right, yeah. To where, like, yeah. Or what we were talking about, too, of just, like, oh, like, movie mode cuts out all the walking around and all the, like, evidence and mm-hmm. clues to where it's just, like, yeah, I don't want to deal with that.
Yeah.
Where was I going with this? I swear I had a point.
That's value, just kind of... Value of it as an interactive piece of...
Well, yeah, like, the value is just, like, it extends the playtime. It extends the time that you spend with it, basically. Like, that's the value. But then also, you do get, like, I mean, 8 hours plus five, it just goes into, like, hour count.
Yeah.
Or whatever. And that is, like, beneficial. And that's we're talking about it now to where it's just, like...
That's not a bad way to measure the value of something, you know, like...
And it's not just about time played. Right. But, like, this is, like, it's interesting to and talk about it.
We're talking about it as part of, like, this podcast thing. Mm-hmm. But it's still, like, regardless of if we were recording it, I'd still like to have this conversation and talk about it. So I think that's also part of the sauce for these type of games.
That's true.
Is...
You get together with your friends and be like, oh, like, what ending did you do? Yeah, what did you do here?
Yeah, exactly.
And that is, like, another, like, games like this have, like, or other games that are similar, have, like, the, oh, X percent of players chose this option.
Right.
You're part of the 1% that shot the puppy. How do you feel about that? Oh, crap.
I do remember that, playing Telltale games, and that being kind of a thing to strive for is, you know, like... Trying to pick the decision that I thought, or we thought when we were playing, like, Tales from the Borderlands mm-hmm. and stuff, trying to pick the decision that we thought was less traveled.
Mm-hmm.
Because mm-hmm. then the game in real time tells you, like, oh, yeah, 23% of players picked your decision. Like, yes.
You're like, ooh, you're divergent. You're special.
We're fucking cool.
You're cool gamers.
We're fucking renegades. Road less traveled.
Yeah, yeah.
But,
yeah, I mean... Totally. I'll say it again because, like, the value of games like this is playing them for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
That's where you get
I agree with that. And I think that is, I mean, a huge win for this game. I think they knew that, right?
Yeah.
Like, you play the first one canonically. That's, like, mm-hmm. that's the game that you get. And then what it gives you is, you know, several different modes to...
To explore other...
Outcomes. Satisfy your, like, curiosity.
Yeah. Exactly. Because, there were times where it's just, like, when Jacob got fucking blasted,
mm-hmm.
I'm like, no, I wanted more.
I wanted more meatball.
I wanted more meatball in my playthrough, but I was very upset about it in the moment. But also now I'm just like, well, motherfucker got shot. Like, what are you going to do?
Mm-hmm.
That's the way it happened. For us, mm-hmm. it's like, that's the way it happened. I don't know any other way.
Is there any way where Ryan, like, survives and finds out that he did that?
Oh, I don't know.
And feels really bad about it?
Yeah. Probably.
Mm-hmm. Like...
I mean, if Ryan lives, then, and Jacob dies, then
Right. It will.
It would probably.
We don't. We wouldn't get to experience that in game.
Brian found out later that he.
Well, that's kind of what I was wondering, because in one of those very cool little animated, like, hey, this is how the game works. When it's introducing you to the weapon mechanic, like, hey, you can shoot, you cannot. It's not just like a combat mechanic. It is going to have impact on the story. And there are some times when it's better not to shoot. That's an active choice to make.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It would have been cool if, like, a scene after that, they could have, you know, been walking back through that path and found dead Jacob. And then, you know, what is Ryan like for the rest of the game when he realizes, like, oh, I blammoed him. And that was my mistake. And now he's dead.
Yeah. I wonder, like, just, how much... There is obviously so much, but also what we've been talking about discussing is how it is kind of linear at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And that goes into the value, too, of just, like, it feels maybe bigger than it is.
Yeah, but that's also another triumph of design and presentation.
That's exactly what I mean, It's just, like, it feels way bigger than maybe it is.
Mm-hmm.
And but only because you might
strip it down
to
that flowchart that we were talking about and find out, like, oh, it's not actually as jamungus as we thought it was, but it does feel that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I was, like I said, this is perfect time for that. I was messing around on the wikis. So, like, every counselor, every playable character has, like, two, like, different stats and, like, storylines where, like, you know, they can die, but they can also become infected, right? We didn't deal a lot with that in our playthrough. The only person who got infected was Nick, and then everybody else just died, right?
Ryan got infected. We accepted the bite.
Well, I felt
really good about that because... We called that.
Yeah, we actively sussed it out through the help of the tarot card and all that stuff.
And we were like, ooh.
That's true.
They should do a tactical bite to survive.
I forget which tarot card that was, but it was vague.
Lovers, I believe.
Yeah. But then, it's just like sometimes you can choose this to save a life.
That was a good way to, like, interpret the tarot card, because it wasn't just like, oh, teenagers are going to bone.
Mm-hmm.
It was, you know, like, hey, maybe, not in a loverly way, you know, you could use the infection. That was cool. I love that bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I wonder if you can get that with any other characters. Do the, like, accept a bite deliberately.
Nope.
To survive something.
That's
only a
rise. Oh, that's the only
that's
one?
Only
well, then I'm really glad that we got it.
I'm fucking glad we found it, because
that was
cool.
A great moment. Yeah. That was a great moment of, like, storytelling in the game and having to figure out that clue.
Yeah.
And to make that decision. Maybe we would have caught it in the moment, but maybe not.
Well, it would have. Like, the playthrough where everyone, or the movie mode where everyone dies... It's still an option. Like, you don't need the tarot card to unlock that.
Well, right. Yeah.
Which is, then why the fuck am I looking for tarot cards? But, like, I get that, like, they can be sometimes helpful, but they can also be a tool for misleading. Because, so, for people who haven't watched any of this Corey stuff or played it themselves, you can find these tarot cards, and then... Every, like, chapter break, or maybe more frequently than that, you get to go visit this, you know, fortune teller, and she's like, would you like to see more?
Yeah.
And you can choose a tarot card that you found, and, like, it shows you a little, like, 5-second snippet of, like, a possible future. Largely unhelpful for the most part. Like, sometimes you can't even see what's happening.
That was our experience, as we started to be like, oh, well... It is a collectible, and I think we were all still interested in looking around a little bit to unlock as many tarot cards as we could. But once we started to continue to go back to her for those little readings, we're like, ah, fuck you. I don't need your help. I don't need this information. I found the collectible, but...
And probably, you know, being 6 hours in and, you know, however many beers at that point we were in, it's like... If we had just done it in, like, you know, chapter segments, like, you know, but one, who's got the time for that?
Yeah.
We probably would have had a little more stamina for, you know, looking around and, like, trying to engage with that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But that would have turned an 8-hour thing into, like, a 6. It probably would have doubled our total time in it.
I would say tripled.
Well, yeah.
You know, just would have been able to get together and everything.
Including scheduling and, like, setting up and sitting down to record.
Yeah.
I'm glad we did it the way we did. I loved marathoning it.
Yeah. I agree as well because, especially for a horror game, right? Like, if it was like the Borderlands Telltale thing, it would be a lot less important, right? Because, like, you've already built up this atmosphere and, like, it's, you're in it, right?
That's true. You know, there's a lot of build.
Horror lives to get you where atmosphere and where pacing. And even though, you know, the pacing is a little bit different than, like, a show or a movie when it's a game like this, atmosphere and pacing being interrupted. I guess, like, yeah, we're recommending that. If you're going to play The Quarry, sit down and play The Quarry.
In as few sessions as possible.
In as few sessions as possible.
It's not always possible to just sit down for 8 hours
and play a game. We had to, arrange that and take away all of our sleep.
In as few as possible is definitely good.
Yeah.
Also, I'd say, like, just the other, like, switching gears over to, like, the role-playing, is all of the, like, horror-themed, like, role-playing experiences that I've been a part of have been one-shots. To where it's, like...
Yeah.
And it kind of goes right into what y'all are saying about that, of just, like, yeah, there's, like, tension, there's atmosphere, and, like, yeah, it doesn't really do a horror movie that much good to build, and then end... And then to restart.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it just becomes harder to do.
Yeah.
Right. Becomes more, and, like, that probably is a reason why I didn't enjoy my solo playthrough, is because I did it in chunks. But, like, you know, I also think probably the biggest part of that is I already knew what was going to happen. I was,
You're just trying to make it happen differently.
Right.
And at that point, you're pretty far from that, like, authentic first experience. Yeah.
What I would like to get into, bringing it back to, like, the role-playing aspects, the like, collectible things that you can find, interesting combination of, like, there's in-game items that you could, like, your characters could use later, right? And then there's, like, kind of the fourth wall meta stuff. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering, and I don't think it's the case, but it would be a good... It could be like a good classification system. Run with me here. So in the quarry, you can find clues and evidence, which are on two different screens on the menu.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, like, maybe clues could be, and maybe they are, and we just kind of missed it or, like, whatever. But those are, like, things that your character knows. Like, your character gets a clue and now knows that information, so, like, they have different speech options or opens up different choices. Mm-hmm. Whereas, like, evidence is, like, fourth wall for the player.
Yeah. I think Nico might be right. So, and then there's tarot cards as a collectible thing as well. So there's a handful of different collectible things. Items that your character, you know, like, do they have a shotgun in this scene?
Mm-hmm.
Clues, which I think you're right. That's a good way to classify it. Like, a clue... I mean, it's also how the game, you know, delineates it. If you have a clue to something, it unlocks different choices at certain crossroads.
Mm-hmm.
Evidence probably is just sound bites for the podcast at the end. I think...
That is what it seemed like to me.
But...
I mean, it's unclear. I was just wondering,
I can't remember. It wasn't our playthrough because... Jacob ran away into the woods and didn't dive in. But if you dive in, right, it had already showed the body down there.
Yes.
So if you dive in, I think it was Egg's playthrough. But you dive in looking for the road arm, and you get caught up in the chains, which also have razor wire on them for some fucking reason. But anyways.
In case it wakes up.
So you get, I guess, yeah.
I don't know, but yeah.
Anyways.
The chains to climb up Everizor?
No, the chains that were holding the bodies. The chains that holding the body down.
Because remember there was the dead hikers?
Oh, right.
So, anyways, Jacob gets tangled up in those chains. Mm. And that's a possible death for Jacob, is getting stuck in those chains. Like, I forget, if you try to pull it out, you die, but if you untangle it, you live, or something like that.
Yeah.
Anyways, he sees the dead body, and I forgot if that's a clue or an evidence piece.
Mm.
But then later, he has a brings that up in conversation, which doesn't really, like, it doesn't really change anything, but it would change, like, if you're, like, strictly role-playing.
Yeah. Because,
like, you're playing as Ryan, and, like, you're like, we need to go back to the cabin, and Jacob's like, he's like freaking out.
Yeah.
So they would change your like decision as Ryan, and like Jacob says, there's a body in the lake. Well, do we go back to the cabin, or do I give him the gun? I forgot exactly what the choice was, but there was a choice there that by finding that body, whether it be a clue or an evidence, Jacob brings it up in conversation.
Right. And that wouldn't have happened. It wouldn't have come up in conversation if no one had seen it. So, yeah, in the designing of role-playing games, and also in the role-playing as characters, considering the information that, you know, you have access to.
Mm-hmm.
That's an interesting one. I gotta say, I don't love the parts of the quarry that did that. There were a handful of these moments that This is where I was most strongly feeling like, well, why are we playing this? Why aren't we just watching it? When the head counselor leaves, and then you see the hunters put up a hunting season sign, and you know, they're like glassing the counselors with a sniper rifle and a hunting rifle. Sorry, pedantic.
Call the police.
None of the counselors know that.
Mm-hmm.
None of the counselors know that is happening. At no point do you have a decision to make where you can act on that information. But I kind of wish, since they didn't know it,
we didn't know it.
You know, and showing us the dead body before anyone goes underwater and can see the dead body is another one where I'm like, And after about halfway through, it stops mattering because everything is kind of out in the open and it's more about survival and planning. But there were moments like that where I wondered, I don't know, this feels more like a movie. I wish I didn't know that was there until playing as a character, I found it.
You got a question? How do you think that would change the atmosphere? We were just talking about, you know, atmosphere and kind of stuff.
Right, because, like, atmospherically...
They would have to do something else. They would have to do something else to sell the atmosphere of, like, you know, kids are in danger but don't know it. I don't know. I don't know what you would have to do instead. Because you're right, that would suck some of the horror atmosphere out of...
Right, knowing that there's something out there, like, you don't really understand it, like, you know, it creates a tension.
But, like, us on the couch, we got to make all these, like, leaps of, you know, knowledge and understanding. We find those chewed-up backpacks in the woods.
Mm-hmm.
We find an article about missing hikers. We see dead hiker in the river. The characters only have access to some of that information.
Mm-hmm.
But then I am, as a player, acting on that information or actively choosing to not act on that information in service of authentic roleplay.
Right. And see, I wonder if you found all the collectibles. Yeah. Let's say you found all the collectibles just because you're being a neurotic 100% gamer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like, would you, as somebody who is gaming, be able to look through, read, comprehend, and piece together all the clues and all of the evidence to make informed decisions for the characters?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know.
And then
there's a narrative that, like, kind of builds.
But then you know all that, and then should you still make a bad decision?
Like, yeah.
I made decisions as Caitlin trying to get trying to get caught, trying to get seen by the hunters, because like at a certain point we were like, oh, I think these guys might not actually be the bad guys.
Well, that was my question that I was
now,
trying to ask
and
a
now
bit earlier.
Like, I wonder, because I wanted to see what would happen, but that wasn't really great role-playing as Caitlin.
No. Yeah. Like, it isn't, but also I'm wondering, like, was there evidence or anything that, like tips the hand a little bit to where, like, maybe these two, like, hicks in the woods aren't trying to murder you. Maybe it's something else. Or are you just supposed to, like,
piece that together? It was the bit where...
To know it's not a slasher movie and it's actually a monster movie.
It was the bit where Meatball was caught in the snare trap.
Right, yeah.
And the guy didn't murder him.
Right.
Tried to get him down, and he was still afraid, and he, like, you know, hit him and threw dirt at him and ran away. And those are choices that you can make on screen. I don't know what happens if you don't...
He bloods you.
Yeah, okay, he just bloods you.
And then gets a call, and then on the radio, Jacob runs away.
Okay, so...
And then ends up in the bush, and Ryan can blast him or not.
Right. And that tells you stuff. And I guess there's really no way around this if it's gonna be a game. But then, like, you know that. I don't know. I had a hard time separating... authentically role-playing as the character who I was playing as when I had the controller, which we also weren't consistent about.
If you want to dissect your strategic fails of quick time events with Caitlin, I think that is a good example of how to metagame fairly and properly.
Yeah, and in the service of drama and experience.
You have an idea.
Yeah.
And, like, you have a choice to, like, you know, I forget exactly what it is, but for example,
like, kick him in the nuts or,
you know, hide or whatever, right? Yeah.
I didn't do the breath holding.
Yeah.
That was another one of the quick time gameplay moments. I on purpose failed that.
Mm-hmm. So, like, the game sets it up as, like, Caitlin's trying to hold her breath.
Mm-hmm.
You, as the player, say, what if Caitlin can't hold her breath?
Yeah.
And, like, I have some extra information. I have a theory that I want to test out.
Right.
So it's not Caitlin doesn't try to hold her breath. She tries to hold her breath and fails.
Yeah.
Right? Because there's no option for Caitlin to be like, hey, same team?
Right. The game, because it's not a pen and paper role-playing game. I can't say, like, I stand up and I, you know, introduce myself
yes.
to him.
Mm-hmm.
That's not an option.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So, yeah, in the service of drama... do not role-playing, but kind of directoring, I guess.
Right, yeah. And I think it would be the same thing if it was... So imagine it was a one-shot that we were doing, right? You have this other information of, like, seeing other people play and, like, have their choices play out, and, like, you know, Caitlin's not there when Jacob gets strung up, right?
Right.
But... you were there, right? Like, the game master explains that Jacob got strung up and then, like, cut down, and you're like, oh, I have a theory.
Yeah.
How can I test this as Caitlin?
Yeah.
Right? Is it, you know, too far of a leap to, like, you know, just, like, when Bobby's coming up the stairs and be like, hey, I mean, maybe, but, like, you know, how else are you going to test that as a player?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. So I think, you know, that's just they did a good job of, and I mean, in the end, that sequence didn't really matter.
No, but.
Yeah. I mean, all in all, I mean, just going back to the top, like, overall, it was a great experience. I think there's always going to be problems when it's like you are essentially making a horror movie.
Yeah.
But then introducing, like, player agency.
Yeah, but you're making a bunch of permutations of the same horror movie.
Gotta tell the story.
Right.
Mm.
And, like, write...
I would say that I'll expand on what you said. Does it feel like we're maybe kind of getting towards wrapping up here-ish?
Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah, I agree. Really, really cool, really enjoyable, successful horror experience. Cool game to play. Most of its value is in that first playthrough, but there is a lot more to it. Maybe not as much as it initially seems like, but there's still a lot of other versions of it inside of itself. And it seems like, even though I haven't done it yet, you guys watching Egg play and Dane trying a couple of different ones, they've made some concessions knowing that, like, the actual gameplay itself is not the strength. So exploring the different possibilities in subsequent playthroughs, they have made consideration for mm-hmm. in the different modes in which you can replay.
Also, it seems like the extra modes are designed to do, I forget who said it, but like to satisfy the curiosity.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because really what happens is like we play through it the first time.
Yeah.
We get our outcomes, whatever mm-hmm. they may be. But
and that's like, the one time where you like really experience it as a horror movie or right. as a horror thing. Like,
exactly.
After that, it's not really.
But after that, you're going to be like, oh, like I want to go see it. Like
I didn't like with how more that
Jacob.
Happened.
I didn't really. I hated that right. Jacob got like gunned down.
I mean, I loved that he died.
And I even said this before. I hated it in the moment. Yeah. I really did because I liked him and I wanted more of him.
I thinking loved back that he on died. It,
I'm like, I do. You know what are you gonna do? He died.
I love that he died, and I love that he died the way he died in our playthrough because that is fucking tragic. And everyone's like, yeah, it's fine. And they don't know, like, the horror that they've just committed.
Mm-hmm.
But I also agree. I wanted Meatball the whole time.
Right.
He was.
And those subsequent playthrough modes, and it's awesome that there are like different versions of it. There's movie mode and like play through it again, full control with death rewinds.
Mm, yeah. Director's cut, just make choices.
Just make
yeah.
choices. Like all that stuff does serve to just be like, you know what? We did do a lot of work to put in yeah, all of these off characters.
They deserve to. They made a really cool game.
And we want you to see it. And it's like, I'm like tempted, but also there is like the, if a movie mode takes 5 hours, like, am I going to get through it? Like,
yeah, how many times am I going to?
Yeah, how many times does it really, when theoretically, you know, you could be missing out on a little bit, but that first playthrough is how it happened for us.
Yeah.
Every other streamer or person who played this game, they got the wrong.
Yeah, that's non-canonical.
That's weird. What are you talking about? You didn't do this.
I am, you know? I'm a little upset and like, not really because I get exactly, it's a concession. The people who can die early, which are Jacob and Emma, they are not huge players, you know, in the in-game.
Yeah.
Like, mm-hmm. Which, like, I get it, right?
How because, can Emma die early?
Oh, if you don't, she dies on the island.
Oh.
Oh, yeah. She just gets murdered.
I guess that's fairly early.
Yeah,
it is. I didn't think of that as early, but it really is.
It's pre-4 hours, I'll tell you that much.
And, like, you know, Emma more than Jacob has, like, some stuff. So, like, if she gets off the island, she can still die or get infected and not die and then possibly harms other people. So, like, that's, I mean, we already said spoilers.
Yeah,
I think.
Spoilers.
So that scene in the van, and we were like, oh, maybe there's a path where Jacob and Emma are in the van fucking. No.
Aww.
It's possibly a werewolf. Emma.
Oh, that's good. Yeah. That's so good,
that's
though.
A great subversion, though, of exactly what I, yeah. Because I was like, yeah, maybe there's a version where they're just, where they
do,
are
do
in
Do you
their
know
dungeon.
It's Emma, though? Or
yeah.
Like,
it's
well,
Emma.
Well, you know it's Emma. They don't. You,
right.
You know.
Yes.
Okay. All right.
The characters do not, they do the same thing where they're like, oh, there's something in the van.
Yeah.
And then.
And it's either Emma
or Werewolf Emma
from escaping or Werewolf. That's great.
That is good. Yeah. That's, I mean.
Yeah. And it's the fireworks.
Okay, so they're still managing to do, like, the horror movie subvert my expectations thing. Because I thought,
I started to
recognize things like that where I'm like, I'm sure there's a couple different versions of this scene.
This seems like
I think
the culmination
I know what they might
of a branching
be.
Path.
Jacob's
right.
is much more depressing. If he survives, if you don't shoot him, he goes at, he does have a, he meets Emma and then another werewolf comes and, like, they split up again. He gets caught in those bear traps.
Ooh.
Oh,
that's a possible death if you like try to get yank your foot out. You like fall on one, I think.
Oh God!
Oh,
poor Meatball.
Or like that's what I read on the wiki.
Yeah.
But otherwise, you get captured and you get thrown in a cage with Werewolf Nick,
And then, like, when the power goes, if you don't release Jacob, which is a puzzle, and I failed twice on the puzzle.
Okay.
And that's where the death rewind came in, so I could get everyone surviving.
Then when the but, cage opens up, he gets werewolfed.
Yeah. Ah. So, and then there's another, so, like, Jacob has, like, bullshit, like, if he survives getting shot, or, you know, if he doesn't get shot in the bush, it's basically just walk around and kind of, like, you know, say stupid shit. He doesn't actually get to do anything. Whereas, like, Emma actually gets to, you know, fight a werewolf and then, like, you know, protect Abby and then, like, you know, be in the room. And so,
yeah.
But, like, I get it. Like, Jacob is the earliest death you could have. And so, like, it makes sense that if you choose that, which we did, it doesn't cut off, like, you know, 2 hours of the important gameplay.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
You know, it's just, it's one of those things that's, like, it would be cool if, like, he was much more important, but, you don't want to make anybody feel like they wasted their money.
Yeah.
Yeah, but also, like, yeah, not every single character can be, like, the hero at the end, the, they're the only person who knew this or that or whatever. Like, it does make sense. In a certain way to have, like, not throwaway characters, but characters that were kind of destined to just die.
Yeah.
Or to be or less
survive, but be less, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
Okay, so there's one last thing I wanted to ask about for you guys who have experienced different versions of this. The interlude segment where Max and Laura are in jail and end up breaking out. How different can that possibly go?
Not very. You never get to the Harbinger. The motel is off the table. Like, we were talking about, like, if you're a gun?
You never get to the hotel?
Railroaded. Can't go there.
Okay.
But, you know, the question of, so, like, that, if we could.
That scene where you're looking around, trying to get in, no one's there, I told you to go to the hotel, that is always how that intro ends.
Yeah.
And then when they're in jail, it basically always ends the same way with breaking out. And Laura is who she is when you meet her.
I think basically, I don't remember from other playthroughs that I've watched, but I think it just basically, like, you can either have good rapport or still be hostile towards...
With the cop.
Yeah. So, like, Laura and Max's relationship, because, like, you know, there's conversation options where it's like, you supported Max.
Yeah.
That doesn't matter.
Okay.
Or at least as far as I know.
You don't get to play as her very often.
No.
So, and when she's there in the scene, you're almost always playing as Ryan instead. Mm-hmm.
And so, you get to play as, if you kill you kill Chris, Max comes back, you know, to being a human, and you have this one little, like, 10-minute chapter of him on the island. Like, if Emma's dead, you get to see Emma's body.
Play as Max.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you get to choose to leave the island or stay on the island. If you leave the island, you die right away. If you stay on the island, Max survives.
Survive to the end. Okay.
But the thing in the prison, Max and Laura's relationship doesn't really matter. It's all about Laura and the cop. Like,
yeah,
you escape either way, but it depends on how you escape. Because, like, if you don't get the syringe, which is what we did, you end up shooting him.
Okay, so he's mad at you.
And then he kills Laura in the confrontation with Chris. Whether or not Chris survives, like, Ryan could shoot Chris, but if you had shot him earlier, he kills you.
Okay.
Or kills Laura.
Mm. All right. Mm. Well, that was the last little one. And that was one of the bits where I was, again, like, okay, this is good, but this feels like an episode in the middle. This is like episode 5 of an 8-episode show, horror show.
That's pretty apt, I think,
Where, you know, we've built a ton of tension, and we're going to leave that tension and really string you along and do a whole episode where nothing happens in the main story.
Well, also, I mean, like, the prison interlude is, like, it's a little bit of an info dump. It's the exposition. Yeah. Yes,
you learn,
like,
a ton, and this is werewolves. To do that. Like, you are past halfway.
You're past halfway.
It's time
These
to
are
learn
werewolves.
What's going on a little bit, as much as you can. And I feel like we as players learn a lot more than Laura actually does.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we saw some stuff going in. We are putting together all the information that every player character has You know?
Right.
Mm-hmm. So she's learning stuff that means a lot more to us than it means to her and Max in the moment. But, yeah. Okay. Curiosity satisfied. I still like all of it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's still great. I've watched Northern Lion's Eggs, like his other Supermassive Games playthroughs. They're all like super... They're fun experiences.
Yeah.
Whether or not you like the particular flavor of Supermassive and their monsters or whatever, mm-hmm. it's a really compelling formula. Like, and all that stuff that's like, oh, technically, air quotes, it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. Like the truth or dare like stuff, yeah. it doesn't matter in the sense of like the story is still going to be told, but it does matter because it like connects you to the characters.
Right.
Yeah.
And it makes you care about them.
Responsible. Yeah.
And it makes mm-hmm. you. Feel responsible, and it makes you like have it gives you control or influence into yeah. the relationships.
And that trick where you know it really works the first time you play through it,
mm-hmm.
you care a lot, and you don't know what's important the first time. You don't know the ramifications of everything the first time.
Yeah.
Second time, you're satisfying your curiosity. Subsequent mm-hmm. playthroughs, playing movie mode, director's cut, whatever.
Yeah. It's a lot less about the actual characters at that point and about, yeah. like, oh, like, what did I miss?
Yeah. What all is in here?
Because, like, yeah, it's like, very compelling to be like, no, like, I love Jacob. He's my meatball. Yeah. I love him. And then, oh, no, he got blasted.
I love meatball.
Or, like, oh, I want Dylan and Ryan to get together. Mm-hmm. Or not. Or is it Dylan?
Yeah, Dylan and
yeah,
Ryan.
Dylan. Yeah, Dylan. Do I want Dylan and Ryan to get together? I'm really invested in this, mm. even though technically it doesn't really matter that much to the whole like horror movie. But in the moment, because
I
it is like...
Because I really did want them to get together, and I felt like Dylan the whole time where, you know, Ryan seemed much more concerned the entire time, especially like he had his own stuff going on. He's like, I don't have time.
True, he was
I
like...
I don't have time to be flirting
I'm not
with you,
that
man.
Interested in a summer fling.
Yeah.
Because like,
I got shit going
on. I got real
on.
Problems.
Yeah, I'm on your side, Ryan. I gotta fucking play this video game, but I was also like, Dylan, yes, come on, flirt with the boy.
No, yeah, it's just really good. And all the other ones are, like, fun, too. The other Supermassive games, I mean.
Yeah, I think it's really good teaching, like, you can learn a lot of lessons for like game masters because
mm-hmm.
it's a great story or it's a well put together story and it does a lot of good things that I think are good in a TTRPG
yeah.
tabletop role playing game you know like making it feel like you mm-hmm. know the player choices matter when they really don't, but it's just good flavor yeah. and like
they
you
might
know,
not
it keeps
always
you into it.
But it should always feel like they.
It's
do.
What mm-hmm. makes the experience. Hopefully, like your players after a one shot or like a whole campaign aren't going like, okay, but yeah, can we go back now that it's mm-hmm. all over? Can we go back to this moment? I want to try something else. You're like, no.
And those are the things that, like, as a game master, those are the things that stick with me the most. Where I'm like, ooh,
mm-hmm.
where I know you didn't have a choice about this.
Yeah.
I knew that, like, no matter what, it was going to end up essentially here. And hopefully you had fun getting there. But then I'm like, should it have been more
right.
permeable up until that point?
I think another lesson, and maybe this is the thing that we put on the board.
Got to put some on the board.
Is the acceptability of failure.
Mm, yes.
Or, like, making the wrong decision, but, like, it still moves the story forward. It yeah. doesn't end the story. So, like, for example, and, like, we had talked about it when we played through, in the beginning, you can choose to break into the cabin to get your bags, mm-hmm. right? If you don't break in, the door is closed, and then when you go back there later, Ryan and
yeah.
Dylan are in the radio room with the werewolf outside, the party comes up, and then, like, you tell them to hide.
Is that a point where Abby can die?
No.
No.
Nobody dies then. But, so, like, refusing to break the door, nobody gets in danger. It actually saves Dylan's hand.
Oh!
So, they are, like, banging on the door. The werewolf goes away from the radio shack. They still open the door and close it. But the werewolf is... left. No longer on the Radio Shack, so when then Dylan does his stuff, he doesn't get his hand bit.
I forgot about the whole missing hand
yeah.
segments of our playthrough until just now.
No, that's a great part. It becomes Ash.
Yeah.
But not really.
But, like, so, like, it seemed, because, like, we picked it up, it's like, oh.
It was a good homage.
We broke into that cabin. I bet it would go down differently if we didn't. It would have.
Yeah.
But,
not in the way, but also not in the way that you think. Yeah.
We thought somebody was going to die, but no.
Like how we thought they were fucking in the van.
Mm-hmm.
But turns out nobody gets to fuck in the van. You just die of a werewolf.
Yeah. So, like, you know, those little failures. And, like, I don't know how bad that would have affected the in-game with Silas. But the reason I had some blood is when Ryan was running through the woods in the very beginning, you know, when Nick got attacked,
mm-hmm.
you failed a couple QTEs.
Mm-hmm.
If you succeeded in those, he doesn't get slowed down and then finds Bobby dragging Nick away and then has a chance to shoot him. If you don't shoot him, nothing, like, you don't get the blood and you still get Nick, because, like, Nick comes out of the bushes when you know, are slow.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, if you get there and you choose to shoot Bobby, you don't kill Bobby, you just wound him, but he drops blood that you don't see again until the very end game.
I've got a bottle of blood.
With Laura and the sheriff when they're hunting down Silas.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right?
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's I love hearing about, like, all these different ways that it could go.
You know, those failing those QTEs doesn't really hurt you in, like, maybe... Maybe it does, like, somebody dies in the woods at the very end. I don't know. But for the large part, you know, Nick still comes out of the bushes. And then, like, because that's the important moment and, like, story is, like, Nick's infected.
Yeah.
And, like, you gotta, you know, deal with that.
Yeah, you go, that's a whole, like, two chapters at the pool house dealing with infected Nick. And that's also, yeah, you meet Laura.
Right. So, like, yeah, failing doesn't cut off important story beats.
Yeah.
I think, yeah, that's what we
that's put on the thing board. On the board is failure, like, you should fall forward. You should fall down into something.
Mm-hmm. It changes things, but it doesn't stop things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, that's a tasty
strong nugget
to end on, I think. Any last thingies?
Not really,
no. Corey? It was a good time.
I enjoyed myself.
And there was a lot to talk about. And maybe more than anything else, that's the value of it. I've thought and talked about it a ton. And that's been as fun as playing it.
If nothing else, like, I don't think we ran into any, like, bad bugs or video game type things.
No, I don't think. Well, we had mechanical issues with the controller.
Oh,
we failed
right.
a couple QuickTime events because the stick was drifting.
We rectified that pretty early.
Yeah.
Pretty early in the playthrough.
But that was no issue with the game or the game design itself or any, like, you know, bugs.
So, yeah, like, despite that, like, we didn't run into anything. It's just, like, it's just such a well-made thing.
Yeah.
It's, like, really well thought out.
It's a hell of a product.
And just, like, you know, love it or not, like, the actual story beats or, like, the conclusions or whatever, it's, like, technically it's a really cool branching story, like, thing that works and subverts expectations too along the way.
Yeah,
I mean, I would assume that other Supermassive games, although I did hear that they, you know, broke out with Until Dawn, and then the rest of the stuff in between that and the Quarry is, like, medium, and, like, the Quarry is a return to form. But
maybe the Quarry is they just finally had a budget.
Yeah, maybe. The point is, I think you should check out Supermassive and their games, especially Game Masters. You don't have to play them and, you know, buy them and whatever, but, you know, read some wikis and, like,
read some
discourse.
Wikis or just, like, watch the movie mode.
They're interesting ways to tell stories, and they do a great job of handling very complex, like, micro decision changes things based, you know, gameplay.
Yeah.
Which I think, you know, is sometimes really hard to do in a tabletop. Because, like, you know, your players, how do you make your players have a choice and like have that affect the story, because you don't know what they're going to choose. So like you definitely can't plan for it, but like there are ways to get around that with like the branching paths that make it seem like it's not railroading, but like they do all intersect later.
Yeah,
but like it just matters like how you get to that later story beat. I think, you know, there's some good lessons in Supermassive games, which, you know, doesn't surprise me. You know, they have money and teams of people working on this stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So also don't feel bad if you can't get there, is what I was saying there.
All right. Well, I think that's probably going to do it for this episode of Two-Headed Game Master. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. Thank you, Nico, our third head.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks for playing the quarry. Thanks for being here for this. It's been a good time.
Yeah, I'll continue to work on, I've been, for the listeners out there who don't know, who aren't on the Discord, I've been watching back through our playthrough and making some notes. Hopefully we'll get the, at some point maybe we'll at least have a smash cut, or at the very least a list of my notes with timestamps that are the funny parts. But yeah, I'll work on that.
If you like what you hear, and you want more,
if you
want
to get the
stuff,
the exciting cut or whatever we end up calling it,
yeah,
you know, consider joining our Patreon.
Yeah, thing to do, head on over to 2hgm.com. One, first thing you'll see is a link to Afterlife, our first full-length RPG product. It's pretty cool, drive-through RPG, it's cheap, and you get a PDF when you buy the print. Share the PDF with as many people as you want, we don't care. Give it to your party. Keep the print if you're the game master. And then, yeah, links to our Patreon, where you get to engage with this sort of stuff. It's fun. I've got a little call to action about that. Something this has made me think of is our annual Halloween event. I don't know who's going to be running what for Halloween, but I'm starting to think about it because of horror.
Mm-hmm.
And... everyone can listen to it eventually, you know, on Halloween night. But if you're a patron or a friend and partner of the podcast, you get to participate in some stuff.
You get to be the player and have a possible effect,
you know,
on character actions. Maybe.
You get to, you get to engage in chat. You get to listen to the live recording early. That's the thing we do. So head on over, join the Patreon, get involved in this bullshit.
I'll mention that signing up for Patreon, I thought for a long time, meant spending money. There is a free tier. Sign up for a Patreon and then become a patron of 2HGM for free. Everyone loves free.
Yeah.
You do get... Give them some money.
You get the Patreon bonuses.
Better yet, though.
We're after fine. We're C...
I'll say right
now.
You
know what? Right
now, I don't mind admitting. Yeah. I didn't know there was a free tier. I didn't know that was how it worked.
If you sign up before we blow up, if you sign up for free before we blow up, you'll probably be added to the Discord.
Yeah,
because we don't have a strict policy of that. Because
and
nobody's,
we won't act like you're nobody.
Yeah. So check that out. That's the next big fun thing on the horizon we're thinking about. Join us next time for another episode of Two-Headed Game Master. We'll come out every 2 weeks, and occasionally we do bonus live play content and shit like the quarry. So, anybody else? Anything?
That's it.
I'm signing off. Thank you to the Burning Saviors for the use of the song Pontilla's Finest as the intro and outro to our show. We'll see y'all next time.
See you next time.
See you next time.